Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone.
Sorry.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to MSP 1337. It is that time of the month. No, it is fireside chat time of the month.
It's very different.
Very different. Matt Lee, welcome to the show. It is that time to talk about data recovery, Control 11. We will get to Control 18 if it's the last thing we do in this lifetime because we've taken roughly a year to get here.
We are halfway through the Oregon Trail, so I can't imagine anything going bad from here forward. So,
I would like to say we're past halfway because there's 18 controls and this is number 11. So at
That'd be two past nine, wouldn't it?
Two based past on the nine, math. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
If we wanted to clock this out,
So yeah, we're getting close.
Today, establish and maintain data recovery practices sufficient to restore in scope enterprise or your assets. I don't really care what enterprise stands for in your world, but your assets to a pre-incident and trusted state. And I think today talking through these safeguards is interesting and different from anything we've done prior to this because we have been dealing with data recovery since the inception of backups.
In fact, I say this in my class, MSPs will walk into 11 and go, I'm crushing 11. Got it. Done. Yep, we've been doing that. And to some extent, with all the joking aside, they kind of have, right? You see every MSP at least have some degree of full system backup plan for their servers. Most of those are using some type of turnkey system and offloading those somewhere else with state, machine state information, right? So you have at least some cursory stuff. However, to your point maybe in the beginning of this, they haven't done it planned. They've just done it. They haven't really even all of them gone down the journey of restore time objective, restore point objective, mapping that to business functions and times.
Well, let's trivialize this a little bit. Let's rewind. So like 10, 15 years ago, we were pretty, like we had a plan, right? Like you only have so much space that you can put data to without it breaking. Like you went out of business because you had too many tapes to put data on.
Yeah, I've played the tape library game before and Iron Mountain, right?
Like,
tape library and Iron Mountain extensibility. Yeah.
So what's interesting about that is not only did we back up what was, I think, critical then, we did a better job 20 years ago on critical
only because
data.
It was more holistic by nature of it being walled in one place as opposed to it being scattered throughout the winds of cloud applications and SaaS vendors.
That's maybe two sides of this coin. So like one side says, I have limited storage. What's important to me?
That's fair. Okay. So through that scarcity creates choice in that definition. I could see that as an argument.
And then like you fast totally forward could. With things like operating systems and bare metal restore. Some of those things that we used to have to back up, we don't anymore because they can be rebuilt and then
virtual
layer on
objects, things to that nature, right? Ephemeral machines that just have a data set reference, things to that nature.
And then, and then 2015, 2016 happened and we started to see ransomware at a level that we had never seen before. Malware at another level, not necessarily ransomware, but malware
early on, like Emotet and things of that nature, Zeus botnet, other extensibilities that were like financial crime
killing
stuff.
It and restoring from backup was like, I got this if you were doing a good
job. For sure.
But now we're shifted in 2015 to like what was encrypted and what was damaged and what really means restore. So like a bare metal restore might be bare metal restore to something else because physically we don't know at what hardware level you might have been compromised. Like they're in the chips.
And that might be taking this to hyperbolus, but the point being, you don't know when in time. You don't know where in time. The forensics weren't being done. It got
more complex,
we didn't
even know what forensics were at some degree.
And I'm being facetious, but we're taking it off on a try. But the point is, I used to say to, and Chris, if you've ever said this about Control 11, I used to say to my technicians and engineers as they were solving problems, a lot of good mistakes can be made with a great backup, right?
A lot of mistakes can be made with a good restore.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like I can go and mess around and try something because I can restore from it, right? Especially back in the very AD centric
and
environmental centric. So that's why I think to your point though, MSPs, at least when it was in a walled garden and a virtual machine state, probably did well. Let's look
Our
at some of the safeguards.
Were rock solid. So 11.1, establish and maintain a data recovery process. I think most MSPs, if we went back a decade, had a process that was pretty solid. Because the variables were pretty consistent. They didn't yeah. just change at willy-nilly.
Yeah, and if you read this other paragraph here, and they're, why is this control critical? When attackers compromise assets, they make changes to configurations, add accounts, and often add software or scripts. These changes are not easy to identify, as attackers might have corrupted or replaced trusted applications with malicious versions, or the changes might appear to be standard-looking account names. Configuration changes include adding or changing regs. Like, they go deep into just some of the TTPs that you would have seen back then.
This is a very
this
nerdy
was written
control.
3 years ago. It is. And so, but the reasoning behind it is, right? And so let's look at this. Let's dig into 1-1. You started it. We've got process. And
well,
that is
let's preface one thing first, because a lot of controls have IG1, IG2, IG3. This literally, except for one safeguard, is IG1.
Yeah. 11.5, I think, is the only IG2, IG3. Yeah, it's IG2. It's not even IG3. And that does say that even though it's 11th in the safeguard, it's 11th, which is like make fun of my extra 11th. My 11th. At least, what is that? Swanzig?
Oh, I was just gonna go with Elvish. Like, is that 11Z?
Drive here, Fun, Sex, Deben, Oct, 9, Zane, Ulf. Is it Ulf? Nice. What's 11?
I mean, I can do Onse.
See, I can't even get it right. Elf. Okay, to the point, I'll take Kindbar in the right hand. Okay, so sorry, I'm having to eat and cram it all together, Chris, and I just needed some editing for you, or not.
I just want to know, are we arm wrestling at CCF?
We have to. Like, okay. I might get you, bro. It might happen. I don't know. All right. We'll see.
I've been planning for this day. All right.
I'm excited about this.
All right.
Okay, so, but the point is, back to this understanding of establish and recover a process is the first thing that has to happen. And it has to be 11th because we have to know what data we have. We have to know what software we have. We have to know how we're going to manage protecting the castle in that way, right?
And now we're at this point. On how 11.1 points back to, like 2.1, like,
oh,
I mean, all of a sudden. 1.1,
2.1, 3 from its extensibility of 3.7.
Probably even 5 and 6 because,
all of it. All of it.
So many things happened prior to this that are impeccable in this being done well.
So 11 comes, but it comes with all IG1s, to your point, which is interesting because it means this is so very important. You need to do all of this now. So let's tackle what that is. First is have a process. And it says address the scope of data recovery activities, recovery prioritization, comma space. And this, and I've used comma space, right? We write this in our visualizations we've made. Each one of those is a different trapezoid or a parallelogram. And it says recovery prioritization, like what's most important, comma space. How secure is the data? Like if it's secure data, I need to be backing it up in a secure way. And that does also include 5. Who has access? And is that really Matt? 6, who has access, right? And what they're supposed to have access to. Okay, but the point is we need to actually deal with each of those components and then also update this annually or when significant enterprise changes occur. Like what could you imagine, Chris? A change in 1, a change in 2, a change in 3, a change in some of those things that are dependent upon that of what I back up. And it really is 1, 2, and 3 centric. And then who and what are the 5 and 6 centrism aspect.
Right? I also like this 11.1 because it uses a word that is not consistent across safeguards. Like there's very few safeguards throughout that use this word. It says process. So anytime I see process, program, or the inevitable policy, which policy is a dead giveaway that's policy, but process and program dictate that the documentation is very, very clear about what's covered and what's going to be done.
Well, to your point, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
To your point, no, you, doctor.
You have food in your mouth, not in my mouth.
You have food in your mouth, not in my mouth. No, okay. Of your point of how many are there, I think process is used something like 16 or 17 times as a control in the CIS. So of the 17 or 18, there's like 16-ish
across
process.
Across 153 safeguards.
Across 153, right. To your point. So when they come up, process is what we're talking about here, and it needs to be able to deal with each of those things, which is recovery, how often, what our recovery prioritization is, like what comes up first, what's most important for business.
So you're getting into RTO and RPO now.
Exactly what you're getting into. Restore time objective and RPO is restore point objective, and RTO is restore time, like how long it takes me versus what point I can restore to in time.
Right. And RPO, that's a big deal, right? Because I went through a ransomware early on 2015, and the challenge we had was to some extent less about the data we were restoring, and it was more about the timeline between data restore point and what we could actually recreate faster.
Yeah.
So That was back in the world of like we're restoring from tape and we're dealing with things like large disk arrays. And what was interesting about it at the time, which granted, this is 8 years ago, 9 years ago, hardware failure today. Remember COVID when you couldn't get anything in the supply chain?
Yeah.
Hardware failure on big enterprise infrastructure was not like you just picked up the phone and called Dell and said, hey, ship me that EMC SAN with the 20 drive array.
That was three months from now or whatever it might be.
We got you. We're going to send you two of them. And they're like, oh, by the way, the hard drives have been delayed because of the Suez Canal. No, we just haven't built them yet.
Right. We're waiting on Taiwan at this point.
Right.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and so the point is 11.1 says have a process. So how many of you MSPs or practitioners out there listening have a backup and restoration process? My gut says you probably, most of you do, at least in some form or fashion.
I would say here's the cool part. The tool is probably doing a lot of that stuff for you.
The execution of it, but the process must be dictated somewhere else. I don't want to disambiguate that problem.
That's fair.
Right.
That's fair. But like as soon as I configured it, I may have forgotten it.
Yeah. And so think of it this way. One of the other things you can think about that's something we invented through the work group, Chris, is the parameterization concept, parameterization and data flow. And that comes down to how do we represent these interrelationships between 11.1 and 11.2. Well, think about 11.2. If I have 11.1, which
we
is a process.
We should tell them what it is.
11.2 is a parameter for 11.1. It says, guess what? Not only should you have a backup, but it should be automated.
Well, I would also say backups, that the funny part about this control is the parameters are 2 through 5.
Yeah, they are 2 through 5. And that's my point.
We don't see
the way
that elsewhere.
These work out. We see it also in 14. We also see it, but anyways, not to be summary. Like, we don't see it many places, to your point. Yeah.
Is this like process?
You are working with Dr. CIS at this point, so I do apologize. I feel like I've put enough hours in.
I feel like that's one of the games on like the Nintendo whatever.
Right, like Dr. Mario, Dr. Wario, all the variants there. This is Dr. CIS.
There it is.
It's
I can
a terrible
see you as
little
a character in the game.
A terrible little game. Yeah.
I want to be Matt Lee in Mario Kart.
Why do these pills have 26 surface sides? How am I going to match these up anyway?
Also, are the milligrams in this? Is that a safe dosage?
So 11.2 says perform automated backups, which really says of in-scope assets. So that's the first thing to think about. What's in scope? To your point earlier, that's what got shifted and decisioned upon when it came to being judicious of storage that was limited. The other piece is run backups weekly. It's the first time you have a prescription in this variable to say that I need to run it weekly or more frequently based on the sensitivity of data. I don't know about you, bro, but I was not okay to back up my clients weekly on their servers. No.
In fact, you know what's funny you say that? Because I remember when we got really excited about continuous backups based on file changes, right? And this is largely where exploitation comes in, right? If I modify a file, it gets backed up. If I modify lots of files, they get backed up. So if I'm doing continuous backup, at what point in time does the original become no longer available because I've done it so many times? But what's interesting about that is that made for the ability to back up large volumes of data because we were only backing up the changes.
The delta. Yeah.
The delta.
Right? It was calculative.
Yeah, absolutely. So that has had a lot to do with the state of threat actors in today's ransomware space.
And why the double extortion started getting created in December of 2019, right? When it was... Yeah,
we don't need to call out the date. That was a bad day for everybody.
That was a bad day, but it was definitely the part when you start going down that path. So the point
is... Let's articulate the automated backups and the importance of this and just kind of close it out because I think we've been... I don't want to say we're rambling, but we're almost beating up people who haven't thought this through.
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair. Automated backups, you need to have it where the humans aren't the failure point. That's why automated. I can't spin enough plates to keep everything backed up. Ask me how I know.
And it used to be this was not a problem that was defined by the person. It was defined by our technology advancements because we needed to swap out the tape that said Monday in order to continue to do this.
Exactly. Okay. Let's wrap up 11.3.
Yeah, wrap up 11.2.
Well, 11.2 is wrapped up in the sense that it needs to be based on the sensitivity. You're right.
Yeah.
There is one more point. One of the things that we aren't doing well as MSPs is making a decision based on sensitivity, usually. Right?
Preach on.
So the statement in this says, based on the sensitivity of the data, which means my backups have the business case to And those usually align with sensitivity. Yeah. You usually have a greater business value out of the greater sensitivity data.
Right.
Point of it. But saying that the backups need to align based on that, here's a great example of where that can fail. And we're going to get into this in 11.3. Let's call this fictitious company called Schmickrasoft. Let's call it, right? Nobody's ever heard of them. They're completely fake.
It's kind of like Snickerdoodlesoft.
That's the one. That was just my cousin's place, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Imagine this company had data sets where security keys were being used that were very, very secure signing certificates, let's say, in an organization. And then those were being logged to a less secure platform. And that less secure platform had a flaw that allowed someone to access it, or some other person allowed access to it. The point being, I now have a lesser sensitive piece of platform information where the backups are being stored, and a more sensitive platform where the production is. That's a problem, right? Because you now run into somebody that has less sensitive access can now access a key, let's say, and then maybe thousands of Schmicrosoft or Schmickrosoft accounts get compromised through that key being able to forge OAuth certificates.
Is that really the question here? Because I feel like when I read this, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but when I read this about sensitive data,
it's really about saying, frequency here.
Yeah, frequency of the backup. So to your point, I feel like this gets us into let's skip 11.3 for a minute, because I think so 11.3 is the only one that talks about protecting the data.
And that's where 11.3 is exactly what I just started to establish.
So let's skip it for a second let's establish 11.4.
Are you just trying to prove the non-yellow brick road version again? Like, are you going back to the
theme? I'm
going
to show you what it's like when I push you down the slide. When I push you down the slide.
Okay, we're going down the chutes and ladders.
When I flex in that arm wrestling match, you're like, I wish he would put it all in right now, because I don't know how much more long. Yeah.
I'm with you. You may find him hard to let go of and get a hold of here.
Yeah, we're going to do this like Sylvester Stallone. I'm going to be like the guy in the truck with the hanger.
Yeah, anyways, I digress. Okay,
so why I wanted to skip, though, is kind of in the same vein. So recovery of data in some cases is more important than protecting the data, because if you can't recover it, it doesn't matter how protected the data.
So you're now getting into 4 and 5 is what you're
right. And so what I wanted to say is why if we cover 11.2, 11.4 and 5, so we've covered 4 of the 5, the reality is 11.3 proves that all of the other things are moot if you can't protect the integrity of the data, right?
And to your point, maybe 11.4 and 11.3 are out of order is the way I might look at this.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I feel like that's a
good way to say it. If Phyllis is listening, I apologize to you, Josh, and Charity. I'm just totally kidding.
That's just
great.
Kind of the observation I had. I think about all the theme that we've been
through. I'll make the argument for you.
Then do it.
So 11.4, I'll just tell you what 11.3 is and we'll come back to it. 11.3 says protect recovery data with the equivalent controls to the original data. So we know what that says.
Right. Like, you don't restore data where it's like now everyone has access to the root folder.
Or you don't even put the stored backups that way. No. What they're getting at is really, Chris, protect the backups in a way. Like, if I back up very sensitive servers to a non-sensitive backup location and somebody has access to that, they now have access to sensitive data. So that's 11.3. 11.4, though, says, hey, threat actor's going to threat act. And when they come in and they have access to the backup server that's on the same domain, because you put it on the same domain, so sorry
and
if you're one of those people, I love you, but you
shouldn't.
And you
took permission criteria away in 11.3.
Yeah. And so 11.4, you're now saying, hey, I have an isolated instance of recovery data. Think like third parties, like a Datto or Veeam, if you set up Veeam Cloud Connector, things that allow you to get a data copy. Lots of those. Yeah, I'm not trying to be exhaustive or exclusive. I apologize. These are just
examples. But in fairness, it's a good thing to bring up. If you're a vendor in this camp, like, you have 6 pages of permissions, and we're back to control 5 and 6, like, this should be something that we treat no differently than we would have with Active Directory, where it's like, no, you are not admin privileged. You do not have local admin
granularity of permissions, right?
It's so granular today in our third-party vendor space. Like, oh, that's on page 4 of the permission settings. Like, this is a perfect example of why that can become problematic.
It is, but in the same breath, I need that granularity to be able to make those decisions. It's about getting it right where it gets simple and built in. That's the I know I'm being a little John Madden here, but back to the point on 11.4 that says establish and maintain
Madden?
Was certainly bef- it was definitely in the time of like, you're not winning because you're simply not scoring enough points. Yeah, thanks, Madden. I figured that out. Like, that was part of this mathematical equation of winning football. Yeah. Okay, but 11-4 says, how about an isolated instance? That would be back to that point of saying, I, as a threat actor, get in and can compromise the environment. You want to limit how much I can compromise so that you have another copy of that backup, an isolated instance. And this follows the 3-2-1 rule. 3-2-1 meaning, right, I have three copies of the data, right, two different medium types, and one in an offsite location. That means I have the production data, my backup one site, and potentially a third party. And then when you get to cloud, that may not directly apply, the 3-2-1.
I just realized why 11-3 lands before 11-4. Because in 11-4, if the data is encrypted, this becomes, adds to that isolated layer.
It does.
If it's not encrypted, this becomes Pandora's box.
Well, but this is talking about reference encryption and data separation, so both come in play. And right, that's why 11.4 further defines it.
Offline, cloud, or otherwise, if someone were to gain access to it and it's not encrypted, it goes back to, it's just everybody has permissions to the data.
Yeah, and you have to think of it as, now, if I can control encryption, I can do something that's magical, and that's called cryptographic shredding. Meaning that, let's say hand you...
Don't have the keys. Here's
a great example. I hand you an envelope with a letter in it, and that letter has just absolute damaging evidence about something.
Is it scented?
It's scented, and it smells like despair. But it's been scented, right? But the point is, I have this letter, and I hand it to you. If you were to open that and reseal the envelope, I don't have any knowledge of whether that has happened, and I now have to assess you to a high level of degree of, will he open the envelope? Let's just say that's a simple way to look
at it. Well, this is obvious, right? That you didn't use the king's crown seal of wax on that envelope.
To your
obviously.
Point, yeah. I would be... Now, by encrypting the letter before I hand it to you, and only then giving you the key when it's time for you to read it,
right.
Now I actually don't have to vet you as much. I don't give a crap about you, because I could destroy the key, and thereby you could never read the letter. And the argument is, when you start thinking about cryptographic shredding by doing 11.3, and when you get into like, okay, in Veeam, you have to check the box yes or no whether you're going to encrypt the backup. To your point, if I encrypt that backup and it goes to third-party provider, some of the stuff I would have cared about the third-party provider, I do not care about anymore because of that separate encryption key that might be plausible. So without getting off on that tangent too far.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't, because we're not saying that everybody that listens to this show is as confident and on point with regards to data. Like, they don't love it as much as we do.
That's fair. I mean, I actually married a data pillow at one point, so I apologize. But no,
you take a data pill. That's very different.
It's probably a true story. Those are very different.
All right, we got two left. Sorry.
But let me finish the why. Is you want to make sure that if I do something to attack, I can't destroy your ability to restore. You want to preserve the ability. And most MSPs, I think, get this right, Chris, at least for the stuff they've selected.
Agreed. But how many are doing like offline storage, or like what they call cold storage, where it's not accessible without some extra steps to get to that data to restore?
Or worm, right? Yeah. Write once, read many. Or version controlled methodologies that allow you to see these version delineations that are non-deletable.
Like,
way to solve this. Whatever
blocking,
that is that you're doing.
Block and tackle, if you will.
Yeah, something that stops you from being able to delete it, except for exigent circumstances.
Well, isn't that how we
right?
all got started with backups in the first place? What do you mean I can't delete that folder? It's called C drive. Like,
that is actually how I had to reinstall Windows 3.1, if I remember correctly.
I might have run into that on a few versions of Windows.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay, we have one 11.5. Well, we have 11.5 and then back to 11.3 a little bit.
I mean, good call.
11.4 was, have another copy of your data, make sure it's protected, bro.
No, like, and not just
this was,
another copy.
And in the old days, you know what this
copy.
Was? Well, but really it is an isolated copy that, in your
we
mind, if you
were
doing this in the old
back
days.
Back in the day, I took the tape out and I took it home.
And I gave another copy to Sally and she put it in her safe. Like, that was how you dealt with that, right? Like,
and then you found that drive on the parking lot ground, and you thought,
no,
I should put this in my computer.
And you know it wasn't Sally that dropped it. It was actually Bill. Unfortunately, we always know it was Bill.
Yeah, and Bill had a drive that you should not put in any computer.
True. 11.5 says, and this sounds so stupid that you have to say it, but, like, let's say you were an auto mechanic that never checked to see if the starter fixed the motor. Mm. Like, how smart would you be if that was the case? And so test recovery data says, hey, listen, bruh. Go check and make sure it actually works. And you see people get cute with this, right? Because they take it to like, oh, I have a boot screen image.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? We're talking about layer 7, not just the application being an operating system up. I want to know, is the application layer being delivered? Can I access it? Is AD functional? Is the Forest Trust broken? Do I have an AD tombstone situation playing out? Am I dealing with an identity problem with Azure AD? Like, all the things.
Oh, so yeah. I love my ThinkPad Lenovo. Like, this is my favorite Windows laptop that I've had, and I love it. And I will tell you, along those lines, I could get the login screen and I could authenticate. And when I authenticated, guess what I got? Blue screen every single time. And what I discovered was, I don't want to talk about it, but basically I had inadvertently tripped the trigger that said, the person logging into this machine might not be who he says he is.
Well, that's fair.
And fair. it literally my Windows profile had gotten corrupted.
Mm. And to your point, on a server seeing a screenshot, you don't know that the rest of it's being delivered, and that's the problem. So
yeah, why would the login read this screen on the surface, does not tell you everything, right? Like, it only tells you, like, no. We were able to get this far.
We got past BIOS and boot. We are here.
Right.
Test data recovery says test backup recovery quarterly, comma space, or more frequently, comma space, for a sampling of in-scope enterprise assets. So when you think about that, a sampling doesn't mean every asset.
We'll pause for a second so
we
don't miss this, because for those of you that don't know, when Matt says comma space, this is not because Matt's a grammar expert. This is because he's telling you something that's really important. So recovery quarterly, comma space, or more frequently, comma space, gets into 11.3. and 11.2, because the frequency in your automated backups and the data recovery, you need to be able to
dictate. And it's value to your business, and exactly. It's sensitivity, and right. It's those things. And yeah.
But anyways, your data recovery, if this is an OS backup, I'm going to tell you right now, quarterly is probably overkill for the version of 11 Windows to make sure that Windows is functional when you've got bare metal restore capability. But if this is your QuickBooks file and it changes every, 4 to 8 hours and you check it once a quarter, that's problematic.
Yeah. And that is where that sampling comes into play.
Right. Absolutely.
Here's a great example. Like, one of the things about sampling, let's talk about it. So an auditor wants to sample, or an assessor wants to see a sample of these safeguards and evidence. Let's say I'm going to ask for 14 things. Out of the 153.
Yeah.
Imagine then out of that sample, out of those 14, the first five you are not meeting. My sample just changed. My sample might now be all of them. My sample might be 100% inclusive.
Right.
So you could see an understanding that sampling, when they say a sampling, doesn't mean that that sample is static. That sample should mean, if I start seeing evidence of a high degree of failure of QuickBooks file backups, maybe I need to now change that sampling size or
write
to that effect.
Well, we saw this a lot in the database space, right? Like, having a backup restore process and getting or in your backup process, seeing lots of errors. Data was active, lots of things. Yeah. It didn't mean the data integrity was compromised, but if you started getting frequency of errors, it was time to check your backups to make sure that those were not compromising the data.
Yeah. That's a great point. So testing, what does that mean? That means if you're really serious about it, you are really getting to the beginning of 11.5. And the reason it's an IG2 is you're starting to get into a disaster recovery type scenario. Because you can't just say, I tested one machine. You have to test a system. They're interdependent. They don't just stand
alone. The ability
alone.
To still use it.
Yeah, that's it, bro. So you're now having to figure out how you're going to stand up a separate environment, test the existing. Like, think about banking. How do they do this? You get one call from Fiserv and they go, hey, on Saturday at 2 p.m., you're going to change the VPN over to this VPN and you're going to do 12 transactions and see if these things work. That's it. That's their test. But that's a test.
Well,
and it takes live infrastructure. But my point is, no. I think you're missing the point here.
I know.
It's that I actually have all the components necessary to actually construct that separate system.
To rebuild
and when I
something
test it,
that replicates what you had.
Yeah. Full system function.
Right. Because I think this is really important to note. Like, someone can rebuild a system on, say, a machine. But if your company has 5,000 employees and tens of thousands of transactions happening in real time, then to say I restored a critical, three of us can get in there, that doesn't necessarily mean you restored anything, because what happens when everybody hits that restore and now you're corrupting data that's not being corrupted by somebody else?
Yeah, exactly.
I digress. Let's go back to recovery data real quick and close this out. So 11.3 was protect recovery data. I think we've kind of skirted it a little bit in the way we've approached how we test data and the why, because protected data should show proof when we do recovery.
Well, and then how do you test? Do I now let someone not equivalently able to access that sensitive data test the sensitive data, or do I have to test with people that have purview to those things? Those are the challenges,
right? This is controls 5 and 6.
Yeah, it really is. And then 5 and 6 applied through the lens of the person turning the wrench on checking the data. How do you have that managed? We did by having an FTE, then that's all
she
did.
I meant controls 5 and 6, not dot 5 and 6.
No, I figured. Oh, for the person listening. I made the jump to, just to be clear, 5 being account management, 6 being access management.
Yes, totally. Yeah. All right. Matt, close us out with recovery data.
Yeah. I think when we look at it from testing recovery and protecting recovery data, you now get into how fast, how often, and then protecting recovery data with equivalent controls goes back to my Microsoft example. You take a system that had very, very high sensitivity at work. Like at the end point, Chris Johnson's the only person able to access this because he's top super secret squirrel, right?
Candidly, it should look the same.
It should look the same. And that's the point. The recovery data should match that. And when you think about it, the more sensitive the data, the more things I should do, such as, and this is what they mean by this, encryption, data segmentation, different ACLs, things to that nature that allow you to meet the requirements of the original data. Think about CUI or FCI as they apply in that.
This
and
is
how that
get
applies.
Into why
SPD,
11.
Yeah.
You don't want to get one of those. But I'm going to say, like, if we apply 11.4 and 5 to this, if there's clarity around 11.3 and the data we're talking about, then your 11 and 4 and 5 are going to have a lot of predefined data variables already set for you. Because, so for example, data recovery quarterly or more frequently, based on the sensitivity of data that you're protecting, this is becoming more and more critical, because getting it wrong one time may be catastrophic. So if your tests are too far apart, you may not know whether or not it would be a bad until bad things happen, right? So like, one has to be very careful with this approach. So 11.3, I now recognize where it sits, and I apologize to anybody that might have said that might have said we should move it.
Wasn't that like, I think you?
Yeah, it was me. It was me.
Maybe me. I think I'm in the same boat.
So like, I pushed you down the slide and said I wasn't going to do it, but like, you're going to go down the slide. All right.
Yeah, totally.
I think we've covered this. If you have questions, you know where to find Matt. I'm not going to tell you where to find me, but Matt will probably point a finger. If you've been listening to this, this has been an episode of MSP 1337. I appreciate all of you. Thanks, and have a great week.